The program you're about to hear will give you some insights into the political nature of the imprisonment of women. Gail Simon has selected and read the writings by some women who are imprisoned, and some material is about particular women or specific situations. You will also hear music and poetry selected from the Olivia Records album, Any Woman's Blues. This album was made by the Women's Concert Collective. It was recorded live in the women's jail at San Bruno in December 1975. The first voice you will hear is Gail Simon's.
My name is Gail Simon. Today I'll be sharing some poems, letters, and stories by and about women political prisoners. Usually, when people think of political prisoners, they envision revolutionaries in places like Chile, Argentina, or Ireland. Yes, those are definitely political prisoners, but we often neglect to see prisoners in our own country as political prisoners. In a workshop on women in prison, someone defined political prisoners as those who have something to say that gets on the state's nerves, or anyone who does something that goes against norms, that threatens a society, is a political prisoner. Then we begin to include women who fight back and kill their rapists and battering husbands. Then we include lesbians who will have minor charges trumped up or worse treatment just because they're nonconformists. Then we include all women who do anything that tells the state, we're not going to take it anymore. I'd like to begin by reading a piece written in No More Cages, which is a prison newsletter for women published by Women Free Women in New York. The human rights problem in the world today is right here in the USA. Thus goes one of the slogans adopted by the African People's Socialist Party for their campaign to free Desi Woods and build a nationwide organization which will lead the oppression and struggles of black people inside and outside U.S. prisons. At a time when President Carter is righteously proclaiming the United States as the champion of human rights in the world, while pronouncing heavy indictments against other countries for the way they are treating their political prisoners and dissidents, the grim truth right here in the USA is total disregard for the state of the human rights of thousands of black, Hispanic, Native American, and other peoples of color, of poor people, of women, of gays, of children, and certainly of all prisoners, those considered political, and those thousands of others imprisoned merely for the crime of having been born into an oppressed group. Assata Shakur, a black woman leader of the Black Nationalist Movement, in jail on framed-up charges of having allegedly killed a police officer, is being illegally held in administrative isolation, her life in danger both from the guards and from Nazi prisoners who have been placed next to her cell. Desi Woods, a black woman who defended herself and killed her would-be white rapist, is harassed daily and has been the subject of forced druggings and other such behavior mod procedures. Joanne Little, a black woman who killed a white prison guard rapist in self-defense, was acquitted of that murder due to massive popular support, but is still in jail, her parole denied repeatedly, facing daily dangers to her life for having dared fight back. Carol Crooks and other Bedford Hills, New York women, politically active in organizing the prison struggle and demanding their basic human rights, are being set up and thrown in segregation as dangerously violent troublemakers. Lolita Lebron and three other Puerto Rican nationalists have been in jail 25 years, the longest confinement in the Western Hemisphere, for the crime of wanting to liberate their country. Cassandra Peaton, a black woman who lightly wounded her husband after he beat her up for years and ended up running away with her money, was termed a dangerous woman, and is now in jail. Texas prisoners have suffered from particularly inhuman conditions. They have recently gone on strike. They instituted a class action suit against the Texas Bureau of Prisons and they have taken their protest all the way to the United Nations, claiming gross denial of their human rights. These are only a few of the thousands of cases where people's human rights are trampled upon in this country. The case of the Texas prisoners is particularly significant in that it concerns general living conditions in prison for all prisoners, not just those jailed for their political beliefs or those singled out for their revolutionary jail activities, singly and collectively. Prisoners in the United States are facing deteriorating living conditions, escalating harassment and disregard of their most basic rights, and suppression of any protest against such treatment. This escalation is parallel to the heightened attacks against women, gays, third world people, and poor people on the outside, and the deteriorating conditions stemming from the worsening economic crisis in capitalist America. In view of the above, President Carter's stand on human rights is indeed a mockery against all oppressed people.
Sister woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Sister woman, sister, have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving? And you've forgotten how to fly. Oh, sister, woman, sister, did they take away your child? And they locked her up in some juvenile hall to grow up weary and wild. Oh, sister, woman, sister, they won't let me come and see you no more. That you wrote me, it's hanging on my apartment door. It reads a knock, but the door won't open. I seek, but I can't find you. I ask, but you can't hear me when I'm screaming. Sister, woman, sister, you cannot hear me when I scream. Feel any pain, or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Oh, sister, woman, sister, oh, sister, woman, sister, oh, sister, woman, sister, oh,
This next piece is about a woman named Carol Crooks, who is in Bedford Hills prison in New York. This and most of my material is about black or other women of color. I don't claim to speak for them or to really know what it's like to be in prison. There's no way I can. What I am attempting to do is to share the information that is available to raise people's consciousness as to the realities of prison life. because we have no idea of what it's really like. Free Crooksy. This is also from a prison newsletter for women. No more cages. Everyone in the prison movement knows Carol Crooks. For those of us committed to the struggle, her name stands for resistance and revolution. For the system, she spells trouble. She is dangerous, and they mean to contain her at all costs. When Crooksy went to the parole board in December 1978, it had already been decided by the authorities that she was not going to get out this year. The day before the board met, Crooksy was provoked into a violent incident by four inmates who, consciously or unconsciously, were doing the state's work. Instead of parole, Carol got 4 months in segregation and a year's setback in her parole. Even if the provocation was not a setup, what followed was a blatant violation of all the procedures which the prison is supposed to follow in such cases, as determined by the U.S. courts after years of litigation work. Among other things, Carol was not given a superintendent's hearing within 7 days, and when she did have one, she was not allowed her own witnesses. This obvious disregard of prison rules was so that Carol would remain in segregation for the full 4 months and her record damaged with no hope of parole this year. Also, Crooksy feels strongly, and we agree, that she was thus isolated so that in her absence from the campus and without her inspiring resistance, the administration could fully reinstate the male guards in the women's private quarters and change all rules to the worse. Crooksy is taking the administration to court within the next few weeks. This is part of her attempt to clear her record. If she loses and the state wins, her record will remain permanently damaged and her chances of getting out slim. Earlier in 1978, Carol was provoked into yet another incident, this time with a white male guard who beat her up and tried to choke her while she was handcuffed. The fact that she fought back, handcuffed as she was, to defend herself is also held against her. Like Crooksy, we feel that the parole board should be forced to give her another chance before this year is over. They should be pressured to review her case again within the next 4 months. There is an update in the newspaper Woman News, which reads, Black prison activist Carol Crooks was sentenced on February 1st in White Plains, New York, to 3.5 to 7 years with a stipulation that she must serve the full minimum before having a chance to be paroled. The sentence is especially harsh since the parole board has granted Carol her long-awaited parole only the previous Wednesday. This did not sway the judge, who on the contrary said the board had acted irresponsibly by not waiting for his judgment. The judge was also not swayed by the many letters of support he admitted receiving in Carol's favor, including one from Judge Stewart, who presided over a disciplinary procedures class action suit in July 1979. Carol Crooks and her lawyer are now deliberating on how to proceed with the appeal. To give you some idea of prison conditions, or how women in prison are living, here are two short letters from the June 1979 issue of Off Our Backs, a Washington, D.C. women's newspaper. Freezing Dirty by Evelyn McClinton. I'm writing in reference to my being incarcerated and the dehumanizing conditions that I'm subjected to. The preceding information will tell you what institution I'm in, and the dehumanizing conditions that I'm subjected to. I hope in reply to my letter you can send me a paper and some literature helping me to clearly understand your purpose. I'm presently in maximum security where all winter long there has been absolutely no heat whatsoever. Every room is freezing cold. A couple of months ago, another inmate and myself were taken to the hole for banging on our doors. We were trying to help the women upstairs. The guards had shut their doors. One woman, not mentally balanced, was receiving real brutal treatment. As the result of that, I landed up in the hole with no bed, just a dirty mattress. Here at Muncie, we have God brutality. They beat on the women as if they own them. The conditions here aren't fit for animals, less more human beings. I'll be staying in touch. In my next letter, I'll go more into details. Afraid for my life. By Doris Stroman. Dear sisters, I am upset and afraid for my life in Muncie Prison for Women. I have been threatened by the assistant warden, Mrs. Priscilla Frey. I have written typed proof and a fact of what she said and threatened me of my life because of me speaking the truth to her about what's happening inside this prison, and she threatened me, and I have the written threatened typed letter by her, Mrs. Priscilla Frey, in my presence. I can't write too much in this letter because it has to go through staff, but I hope and pray this will go through because I'm writing certified. The staff does not allow anyone to tell what goes on here in this prison because they don't want the outside world to know the real truth of what goes on here inside this prison. So when you reply back, write privilege mail so the staff won't open it. You can always come up to see me, long as you is in some type of prison society program. We are pleading, all of us women here, for your help. Thank you in advance, and any help you can give us, we cry out for help and assistance. Yours truly. Now I'd like to read some material about the situation in Chile. There's a brief introduction about the situation in Chile, and then an interview with a woman named Gladys Diaz. Also, the situation in Chile is similar to that in other Latin American countries such as Argentina, Bolivia, Peru, and Uruguay, and Brazil. I'm reading from Women in Resistance. Latin America, counter-revolution and resistance. Chile today is a counter-revolutionary state in which the only law that counts is the law of force. The legislature is suspended and the courts obey the mandates of the military junta. Political prisoners are the most obvious victims of the dictatorship in Chile and elsewhere in Latin America. And everywhere we find that many of these prisoners are women. The heroism of the Chilean Gladys Diaz and the Brazilian Jane Vinani is exemplary. The cruelties perpetrated upon them are part of a pattern of oppression now familiar to the masses of women in Chile and increasingly in the rest of the continent. The struggle in Latin America is clearly a class struggle. Women have always participated in this struggle on one side or the other. Before the coup in Chile, upper and middle class women, threatened with losing some of their economic and so-called privileges, took to the streets in the famous March of the Pot and Pans. They were protesting food shortages caused in part by their own hoarding of scarce items and were joined by lower-class women whose lack of political preparation made them susceptible to right-wing propaganda against the Allende government. More politically conscious women dealt with the problem of shortages in another way. They organized food distribution centers in the communities and supported government measures to control speculation. Upper-class women were spared the necessity of coping with such problems as childcare and decent medical attention. These, however, were the issues around which poor and working women mobilized. They formed daycare centers in the factories and barrios so that they could work. They established free milk distribution and medical care centers so their families could become healthy. They fought for public schools so their children could be educated. They all became active in trade unions and political movements, and some, such as Gladys Diaz, rose to positions of leadership. The risks inherent in such activities as organizing soup kitchens and forming support groups for families of disappeared prisoners cannot be overestimated. Anyone can be imprisoned at any time in Chile. Women prisoners, like their male counterparts, are routinely tortured, but in the case of women, the machismo of the guerrillas manifests itself in sadistic tortures of an erotic nature. The aim is to humiliate women, specifically in their femaleness. The torturers force their female victims to repeat sexually self-denigrating terms. They mutilate them sexually. They masturbate while torturing them. They rape them repeatedly and in groups, or sometimes they use trained dogs to rape them. They have, on occasion, forced them to have sexual intercourse with male members of their own families. In the event of conception, the authorities try to prevent the women from aborting and euphemistically call the resulting offspring children of the fatherland. Pathological sexual insecurity and hatred have been unleashed and institutionalized in the hunters' torture houses. This is the sordid truth behind the hunters' public profession of a strict and puritanical morality which recommends that Chilean women not wear pants or cut their hair so as to preserve their femininity. Interview with Gladys Diaz, Imprisonment and Torture. I would like to explain to you the stages of torture that a prisoner of the DINA are subject to. The DINA has torture centers which are unknown to the public and whose existence is officially denied. No one who has been arrested is officially recognized as a prisoner as long as he or she is detained in one of these centers. Via Grimaldi is one of the few known centers. Who is allowed to live and who must die is an important question. It is decided as irrationally as everything else that the junta does. Among those who have disappeared are leading comrades, but also many people who have not held any political responsibilities or even been active in the resistance. Some people have survived, like Victor Toro and myself, who were known as MIR activists before the coup. I will attempt to explain why we are still alive. First of all, I would like to mention something very important. From the beginning, a resistance fighter in Chile knows that he or she takes the risk of being imprisoned by the DINA. He or she knows that not only one's freedom can be lost, but one's life as well. First, the DINA tries to break a human being. In order to make a prisoner talk, other prisoners who have supposedly already talked are brought in. The prisoner is told that the resistance movement no longer exists, that everyone is either imprisoned or dead, or that everyone has talked, which is not at all true. The new prisoner, in a state of shock over the loss of his or her freedom, is sure to be disturbed. As a prisoner, one is powerless, not only in theory, but in reality as well. Hands cuffed, eyes blindfolded, feet in chains. It is impossible to move. Such treatment is usual. If it brings no results, as is normally the case, torture begins. It is of utmost importance to the DINA that torture be very intense during the first hours. These first hours are crucial to learning information about the underground. Anyone operating underground has had contact with others only on the day of capture or the day before, or had planned to make contact in the immediate future. The DINA knows that if a prisoner resists during the first few days, they won't have many chances left. Torture is therefore brutal during the first days, continuing day and night. The first method used, electric shock, is intense. The pain is very intense. It is a new pain never experienced before. Electricity is applied to the most sensitive parts of the body, i.e. the nose, the mouth, and in the case of women, the vagina. One is nude, chained, legs spread and also chained. One feels humiliated as a human being. The pain is very intense. The brutal interrogations put immense psychological pressure on the prisoner. This type of torture is always used before any other. The length of the torture depends on the value of the information being sought. As a prisoner, one ceases to be a human being and is turned into an information object. I can speak of my personal case. I was someone who had been searched for since the September 11th coup. I had appeared in public as a Movement of the Revolutionary Left, or MIR, organizer, and I was well known. I was someone, in their opinion, who had to have an enormous amount of information. I would like to mention something else, although I'm not clear on its importance. The day I was arrested was treated as a day of celebration in Via Grimaldi. Consequently, my companero, who was arrested with me, and I were tortured very brutally. For the first 3 days, we were tortured incessantly and only with electric shock. My friend resisted, and only after 3 days did they stop torturing him. After 3 days, his information would not have had much value. They continued torturing me, but without electric shock, for twice my heart had stopped beating. A Dina doctor said that I would die if I were given more shock treatments. They had an interest in keeping me alive because I was an information object, and they hoped to break me. They changed the torture methods. I was plunged into dirty water, what we call the submarine method. I was kicked around with karate chops, physically the most exhausting method for me. After this, I remained unconscious for 48 hours. My ribs were broken, my eardrums destroyed. I was bleeding all over, and I had a high fever. A comrade in whose cell I was placed helped me. She was pregnant and later had her baby in prison. She even helped me put my ribs in place as they were pushed against my chest. The Dina thought that they had ripped my lungs apart and that I would die. I had great breathing difficulties, but this was because of the broken ribs. I made an important discovery in connection with the karate torture. I figured that with the help of my consciousness, I could control my body. I felt no pain when I was attacked. I did not want to give the enemy the satisfaction of hearing me scream and cry. I actually succeeded in not feeling any pain at all. I felt the first pain after awakening from 48 hours of unconsciousness. Many prisoners underwent the same experience. The energy one uses to make it impossible to be weakened by the enemy makes it possible to control the sensitivity of the skin. Then they tried drugs. They gave me shots of pentothal. Shortly prior to my arrest, the MIR had published a paper in which it was proved that as long as someone does not want to talk, the drug cannot make him or her talk. If a truth pill really existed, no one in the world would need torture. The MIR paper proved scientifically that the time during which one is unconscious is very short and can be recognized only by an expert. Only a few people respond to pentothal, and not much can be revealed during the short period of unconsciousness. The drug method is used mainly to create feelings of guilt in the prisoner. She might have the impression of having talked during the period of unconsciousness. When I received the pentothal shot, I concentrated on just one thing. I know nothing. I remember no names. I know no one. Since then, I have been traumatized. Today, I have great difficulty remembering people's names. I forget them very quickly. I forget someone's name 10 minutes after I meet them. I even have difficulty remembering names of good friends, so much did I concentrate on forgetting during those 10 days when I was given the drug shots. These are the only effects of the torture I still suffer from. I do not want to show off how strong I am with all this. I just want to talk about experiences which could be used by others elsewhere. It is possible to withstand torture if there is the desire to resist. My release was not a very happy one because I was thinking about the people I left behind. How unjust it is that I am still alive because a campaign of international solidarity was possible for me while their deeds remain anonymous. These are one's thoughts in leaving prison. It is very sad, even knowing that the struggle takes victims and that, because of the brutal conditions under the military dictatorship, the number of victims is especially high. Even if we are willing to make these sacrifices, a revolutionary does not lose sensitivity towards the loss of precious human lives, the lives of comrades.
You can hold it out. sing that as loud as you can. Because we want to leave here believing that you will hold it up until you die. Can we get y'all to sing with us? Come on.
We got to hold it up until we die. We got to hold it up.